The following previews are of graphic audio productions rated for mature audiences due to scenes of intense violence and sexual situations.
When Chun sees an infomercial produced by Man Hyung's son and his cult of loonies, Chun knows he has found a true holy man. Remo knows he has found a true nut.
You know, this probably isn't the best time to tell you this, Rosebud, but I don't think we're who you think we are.
I was sent for you.
No, it couldn't be us. No one even knows we're here.
The Reverend Sun does.
Bullshit. I don't believe in any of this fortune-teller malarkey.
Do not listen to the heretic. If he blasphemes, it is merely the product of latent Catholicism. Perhaps good Seer Sun might perform an exorcism.
Remo's frustrations grow greater as Cure ships him to North Korea, where brainwashed American loonies are dancing to their leader's tune in a gambit to all-out war.
There is a problem. It is with the Americans.
Yeah, what about them?
Some of our agents in the field have been eliminated.
Eliminated?
The bodies were brutalized, Premier. The heads and fingers were removed and sent to us. Most likely for identification purposes.
So, what's the deal? Are the Americans pissed at us for some reason again?
I honestly do not know, Premier. However, I would recommend retribution for these killings. We cannot allow any government to imagine weakness on our part.
But Korea isn't the only split faction at war.
Forgive this one great seer. He is a fool.
Better a fool than a stooge. This is a holy moment. It is not open for disbelievers.
I don't know what kind of half-assed get-rich-quick scheme you've cooked up, but there's no way you're going without me.
Leave.
Make me.
Will Master Chun become a pawn of the mysterious Reverend Sun and his cult of loonies, and leave Remo to defend the free world alone? Find out in Destroyer number 115, Miss Fortune Teller. Available now on Graphic Audio.
Available now from Graphic Audio.
The First Mountain Man 5, Cheyenne Challenge.
Pete, you've outlived your welcome at this rendezvous. Hell, and all the big empty for that matter. I reckon all these fellas here will go along with me when I say we want you out of camp before nightfall.
You're not even dry behind the ears yet. Who are you to tell me that?
I'm the man who's an inch from slitting your gizzard.
Turn me loose. I'll show this whippersnapper the error of his ways.
Oh, we'd be mighty pleased if you did.
Yellowstone Frank Parks, a close friend of Preacher's, released the arm he held.
All right, Preacher. Get ready for the ass-kicking of your life.
10 years ago, the legendary mountain man Preacher taught a violent lesson to Eastern bad man Ezra Pease when he ran the outlaw out of town. But Pease, his trail scum, are back, shooting up the big empty to nail Preacher's hide to a tree.
Looks like we found the wrong place to be in.
The riffraff swarmed down the hill into the meadow where Beartooth and Preacher lay. They had 100 yards of open ground to cross to reach the mountain men.
They're getting in pistol range.
Two shaggy-haired louts appeared around the side of a large oak tree.
How many more of them?
Beartooth sighted in on a burly ruffian and homespun who zigzagged toward him.
Been too busy to count.
I'll make it 6.
4 after that one.
You're enjoying this, ain't you?
Well, it ain't my favorite mess to be caught up in. Still, there's something to be said for it. Sure keeps the blood pumping through your veins.
Beartooth groped for another pistol.
We'd best put an end to this right sudden. There might be more of these ragbags out there.
Yeah, I was thinking the same thing.
The one called Quint showed himself then, along with 4 others.
You ain't got a chance, Preacher. We got you cold.
Now that's plumb unfriendly.
Preacher sighted in and fired the first barrel. Bark sprayed from the trunk of a big old silver-tipped fir. Quint jerked back behind the tree for protection. Preacher took aim on another of the misbegotten brethren.
See Nixon, Preacher?
Sure enough. We'll give him a little time. He'll show in the open in a bit.
That prediction proved true some 2 minutes later as Quint gained more altitude up the slope of boulders. Preacher had readied himself with a fancy French sporting rifle, and he popped the cap when the hole of Quint's left shoulder filled his sight. Both of the survivors had had enough.
They had to be peace's men. Something's gonna have to be done.
Yeah, and if and I know you, it ain't gonna be pleasant for our Mr. P.
Preacher's riding to teach Pease one final deadly lesson. But he may be too late, because Pease's vicious dealings have fired up an all-out Indian war.
It was about 10 o'clock when Preacher first saw blacker shapes flitting from one bit of sparse cover to another. It didn't take long to figure out that it wasn't no pack of coyotes or wolves. One of them reared up abruptly and drew taut a bowstring. Another foeman quickly took his place. The hostiles were in too close for riflemen, so Preacher ignored him to get one of his four-barrel blitzers into action. By then, the drivers, led by Buck Dempsey, had opened up on the invading engine. Preacher took his eyes off the assault and cut a quick look around the compound. He turned back just in time. Preacher had barely turned the next barrel into line when the young Pawnee rushed at him.
Hold on, boys!
Now, with hard-riding death on both sides, Preacher, along with his old friends Beartooth, Dupree, and Nighthawk, are heading straight into lead-flying, scalp-smashing hell. Don't miss the chance to blaze a trail to adventure with Preacher in the first Mountain Man 5, Cheyenne Challenge.
And now, for our feature presentation.
Graphic Audio. A movie in your mind.
King Petty had no place to be and was in no hurry to get there. For all practical purposes, he ruled the town of Snake Creek, Texas, and the surrounding area. The few men who dared to defy him died a long time ago. The ones left alive were scared to death of him, including Richard Holt, the town marshal. Not a man or woman alive would argue with anything Petty wanted. He ran a variety of illegal operations, including cattle rustling, that gave him all the money he needed. His men could handle most of the work on their own. He had all the free booze and women he wanted at the saloons in town. Most days, he didn't even have to ask. All he did was step through the batwing doors to find a drink in his hand and a woman in his lap. At 23, he faced no major challenges, no major problems, and he barely knew what to do with himself. He almost wished for the days when men would face him in the street for an old-fashioned shootout, just for something different. Though the morning was bright and full of promise, Petty paid little attention. He rode aimlessly through the countryside, passing an occasional homestead and scowling. He viewed the homesteaders with contempt as weak and inferior, struggling to make a poor living out of the hard ground. Otherwise, the sodbusters meant nothing to him. They had nothing he wanted. Hell, even the women weren't pretty. Occasionally, he or his men would beat up a farmer or two in town, just for sport. But most of the time, the homesteaders cut a wide path around him. Petty let them go their own way. Petty reached the top of a small hill and looked down across a field. A farmer and his team struggled to plow. His young son was working with him, helping to clear brush. Though it was only early morning, the two were already sweating heavy, soaking their shirts. In the distance, a modest farmhouse stood small in the vast plain.
Sodbusters.
Normally, he just kept riding. But something told him to keep his place and watch the scene. Petty held the horse steady as he watched, though he became impatient easily. He was about ready to ride away when the door to the cabin opened. A young woman stepped out and paused with her face raised to the sun. The woman caught Petty's eye. She was shapely as some of the saloon beauties that he knew, but wore a simple dress that made her more appealing. Her long hair was tied up on her head. Petty's eyes followed her as she walked to the well near the house, pulled out the bucket, and started toward the field where the farmer was plowing. The morning suddenly seemed a lot more interesting. The farmer took the bucket. He and the boy each took a drink and wiped their mouths on their sleeves. The man kissed the woman and motioned to the boy. She picked up the bucket and started back to the cabin, followed by her son. The outlaw let the woman and boy walk out of sight before he nudged his horse forward to where the farmer had already started his plowing again. The man was concentrating so much on his work, he didn't notice Petty until the horse was almost in the field.
Hello, stranger! Can I help you?
Maybe. Maybe not.
The farmer was a little older than Petty, but not by much. He wasn't wearing a gun, and no gun was in sight. Petty shifted in his saddle to put his own revolver within easy reach. The farmer apparently didn't suspect trouble. He remained standing, hands still on the plow.
You own this place?
Working on it.
That your wife?
What's it to you?
Good-looking woman.
I don't think I like this talk. You just keep on riding.
Petty loosened the gun in his holster.
You telling me what to do? If I were you, I'd think twice before trying to boss King Petty.
The farmer narrowed his eyes.
I've heard about you around town. Never thought to see you out here. Would you kindly move on? I've got work to do.
There. You did it again. Trying to tell me what to do. Now you've made me mad.
The farmer took a step back and looked around him. He had no weapon and no path of escape.
Now, listen, Petty. I have no argument with you. I meant no harm.
By damn, now you're whining. Now you really made me mad.
Oh!
The bullet hit the farmer in the shoulder. He fell to the ground, blood soaking his shirt. The farmer looked down at the blood in disbelief.
What'd you do that for?
I felt like it. I can do anything I want. What's your name?
Jack Brandom.
Good. I sometimes like to know the name of a man I'm killing.
Lily Brandom carried the bucket of water back from the field despite her son's offer to help. Tommy was 10, almost a man, but Lily didn't mind him being a child just a little longer. He worked hard in the field, with plenty of chores waiting for him when he got back to the cabin. She could handle the water on her own. Life on the homestead was tough, but it was the only life she knew. Her husband was a good provider, and she was loyal to him. She was proud of her son. Life was good. Unless something terrible happened, it would continue to be good. She stopped in shock when she heard the first shot. Tommy also froze, then started to run toward the field where he left his father.
No, Tommy! Don't go back!
But Daddy may need help.
Go to the cabin.
No, we need to—
Do as I say! Run to the cabin and get the rifle. I'll see what's going on. Now go!
The boy took off, running faster than he had ever gone before. Lily heard the second shot and felt a sinking in her heart. Jack seldom had a gun with him. He didn't like guns, didn't want having one on him to worry about. So the shots were fired by another. Perhaps it was just somebody target shooting, she told herself, or maybe somebody was shooting snakes. There were plenty in the area.
Jack!
Lily ran back toward the field, but was blocked in mid-stride by a young man on horseback. Beyond him, she could see her husband's body on the ground in the field.
No!
She couldn't see clearly, but she knew he was dead.
Your husband had a little accident. Got in the way of a bullet. Shame. Looked like a good worker.
You shot him! You killed him!
No argument there. He made me mad. And he had something I want.
You want this land? You don't look like no farmer.
It's you I want.
Lily felt nauseous. She wanted to get away. She was as trapped in the open as if she were locked in a room.
What do you want with me worth killing my husband for?
Old Jack must not have been much of a lover if you have to ask me that. But I had enough fun for one day. I'll be coming back for you, my pretty widow, Brandon.
You can't get away with this! I'll tell the marshal! He'll see you hang!
Fact is, pretty lady, I just did. You don't get to town very often, do you, widow? You got a lot to learn. I'll be the one to teach you. I think that'd be a lot more fun than I've had in a while with the girls in town.
Come back here and I'll kill you. I have a gun.
Yes, you will be fun. Widow, I'll be back. Anytime I feel like it. As many times as I feel like it. And there's not a damn thing you or anybody else can do about it.
Petty started to trot his horse back to town and was almost out of sight when Tommy returned with the rifle. He saw the body on the ground and the tears in his mother's eyes.
What do we do now, Mom?
First thing we have to do is bury...
Tommy was 10 years old, almost a man. He returned to the cabin to get a shovel. His father taught him not to cry. He would let the pain, the guilt, the shame come out later when he was alone.
Graphic Audio presents William W. Johnstone's Blood Bond. Narrated by Thomas Penny. With performances by Dylan Lynch, James Lewis, Elizabeth Demery, Eric Messner, Michael John Casey, Terrence Aselford, Karen Carbone, Andy Clements, Christopher Graybill, Nanette Savard, Ken Jackson, Richard Rowan, David Coyne, and Mort Shelby. Blood Bond number 9, Death in Snake Creek.
Matt Bodine and Sam Two Wolves rode leisurely north. The dry country they'd seen farther south in Texas gave way to grass and trees.
There's something about a warm spring morning that makes a heart glad.
Yeah, well, just don't burst into song. I'm not sure the world is ready for your singing.
I can carry a tune with the best of them. When I was in school back east, I was even a member of the glee club.
You mean everybody was filled with glee when you stopped singing?
No, my singing was so beautiful it brought joy to the hearts of all who heard me. Look it up. It's in the record books. At least it beats your record of spending 2 days and nights in the San Antonio jail.
At least they didn't arrest me for my singing. It was for the fight after calling out the crooked car dealer. How was I to know he was the sheriff's brother-in-law?
It did take a little convincing to get them to let you go. Once again, I saved your hide. I don't think you ever did properly thank me for that.
I've listened to you gloat about it ever since that time, as well as listening to your singing. That ought to be worth something. Just do me a favor. Don't sing while we're fishing. I'd hate to scare the fish away.
Who knows? My bright voice might call the fish to us.
The two men rode and exchanged their mock insults. The talk was good-natured because the two men were closer than friends, closer than brothers. More than traveling many miles together, Matt and Sam were blood brothers in the Cheyenne tradition. In many ways, they appeared similar and were often mistaken for brothers. Both were young, in their early 20s, handsome and muscular, over 6 feet tall, and weighing over 200 pounds. Though Sam's hair was black and Matt's was brown. They knew each other well after riding thousands of miles and surviving hundreds of fights. An unfortunate result of the many shootouts they survived was their developing reputations as gunfighters. The two were natural warriors. Sam's father, Medicine Horse, died during the Battle of the Little Bighorn after he charged Custer, alone, unarmed, but for a coup stick. Matt and Sam watched the slaughter at the Little Bighorn, a secret only they shared. During the time following the death of Sam's father, Sam and Matt decided to drift for a time in an effort to erase the terrible memory of the battle. They were often mistaken for out-of-work drifters, but were actually well-educated and wealthy. Matt and Sam now owned profitable cattle and horse ranches along the Wyoming-Montana border. Ahead of them flowed a clear stream past a stand of trees.
I'm not even going to let you spoil my day. It's good to see grass and trees again. This place looks promising.
Yeah, it does look good. I'm looking forward to some real fishing. It's been a while since I've had a chance to lean back and drown some worms.
He stepped out of his saddle and found a gentle swell near the water.
This place is for me. Once I cut a pole, I'll be in good shape.
Sam got off his horse, then started to go through his packs.
You plan to catch anything?
Enough to fill our bellies.
Think there's enough fish in that stream for that?
Enough for a start.
Then we need some more supplies. We're out of flour and just about out of salt. There's supposed to be a town a little further down.
You go in and take care of the groceries. I'm gonna get a head start on supper.
He ran his hands along a sapling.
This looks like it'll do.
The old ways are still the best.
You bet. You're just going in for a few supplies, right? Think maybe you can stay out of trouble this time? I'd hate to interrupt my fishing to rescue you from some mischief.
Just save some fish for me. I plan to be back by supper.
It was all Lily Brandom could do to keep from crying as she rode slowly into town, her son beside her on the wagon. The sun was still shining, the grass was still green, but the world was changed. Jack, her husband, Tommy's father, was dead. Jack was already buried. Lily couldn't bear the thought of his body being torn and mutilated by the coyotes. There was no time to grieve, and the full impact of the murder still hadn't hit them. She kept thinking about the fields to be plowed, the seed to be planted, the work to be done. She kept hearing her husband's no-nonsense voice in the house they built together.
I'm trying, Jack.
Lily was working now from sheer guts, keeping her emotions under control until she could report the crime to Marshal Holt. She remembered Jack used to say something about Holt not being much of a lawman, but with Jack gone, she didn't know where else to turn. As the woman drove the wagon into Snake Creek, she thought again how the town was almost as ugly as its name. She never liked the town, even though the acres Jack bought outside of town were good. She compromised by letting her husband do all the errands in town while she stayed on the homestead. Sometimes he would bring back the latest news, but she usually preferred to talk about other subjects. Jack finally stopped sharing the latest gossip with her. Lily now wished she paid little more attention. She wondered how many friends Jack had in town, how many knew about the man who murdered her husband. The town was new, but the buildings, a few stores, saloons, and gaming houses, already looked old and faded. She passed them, barely seeing them, trying to locate the jail. Lily jumped as she passed the Black Bull Saloon, and a young man stepped out. King Petty tipped his hat mockingly and leered at her. Tommy clenched his fists and started to stand. Lily placed her hand on his arm, stopping him as the wagon passed. The jail was at the end of the street. The building was small and looked in even worse shape than the rest of the town. A man lounged in a chair in front of the building. His belly stuck out of an unbuttoned shirt. His suspenders were almost off his shoulders. Apparently, he hadn't shaved in days. Lily wondered why the marshal didn't run the bum out of town or put him inside the jail where he belonged. The woman parked the wagon and climbed down. The unkempt man opened his eyes and watched her approach. He said nothing as she brushed past him and entered the jail, her son close behind. The room was a mess, with papers scattered on the floor and the cell doors open. Lily went back outside, but nobody was on the street except for the man still sitting in front of the jail.
Howdy doing, ma'am? Looking for somebody or something?
Do you know where I could find Marshal Holt?
I reckon I do. You're looking at him.
Lily's heart sank. If this was the law in Snake Creek, she knew there was little or no chance of bringing her husband's murderer to justice. Even so, her daddy, and then her husband, stressed the importance of the law and following the law. Now that she was on her own, she had to try.
My name's Lillian Brandom. My husband's son and me have been working the valley a few miles outside of town.
Oh, your husband, Jack Brandom? Yeah, I've seen him around town a few times. Quiet man. Doesn't make much trouble. I like that.
He's dead.
The hell you say? How'd it happen?
He was murdered. I want you to bring the murderer to justice.
The marshal stood slowly, pulling up his suspenders and looking thoughtful.
Oh, murdered, you say? That's not an easy crime to solve. You need evidence, eyewitnesses. Investigation takes time, months, maybe years.
I have all the evidence I need. I can identify the murderer.
Yeah, it might not even be in my jurisdiction if it happened outside the city limits.
Tommy took a step forward.
We saw my dad's killer when we came through town. Go arrest him.
And who do you think that was?
Don't know his name. He was down at the Black Bull Saloon.
Holt's face turned white.
Come to think of it, I'm remembering your husband real well. Got into lots of fights. Couldn't handle his liquor. I'm surprised he didn't get killed before now. He probably got what he deserved.
You're a liar! My husband was a good man. What are you trying to do?
A rough hand suddenly grabbed her, pinning her arms to her side. She struggled, but could not get away. Holt had hold of the boy.
What's happening here, Marshal?
Hey, King. This woman claims her husband was murdered.
Lily looked around her and saw that King Petty was the man who had her in a vice-like grip. Several of his men were spaced around them.
That's the murderer! That's the man who killed my father!
Yeah, I killed the bastard this morning. He was causing trouble.
Just like I thought.
Holt wiped his face with a dirty arm, holding on to Tommy with the other.
Jack Brandon was a troublemaker, so it wasn't murder. Looks to me like an open and shut case. I'm glad you stopped by, King, to straighten out the mess.
Lily tried to spit at Holt, but King kept her off balance, and she missed. Lily struggled even harder, but King Petty held her so tight it hurt.
The woman is upset about the loss of her husband, though from what I've seen, it was a small loss. I think, however, there is a law against spreading rumors about law-abiding citizens such as myself. Isn't there, Holt?
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, there is a law like that. Want me to arrest the woman?
Tommy struggled and almost got away. Petty gestured to one of his men.
Con, take the kid and keep him out of my hair for a while. Don't hurt him too bad, unless he gives you trouble. Marshal, you've done your usual fine job. Now, go on about your business.
He dragged the woman toward the Black Bull.
Leave my boy alone! Get your hands off me!
I've got my own business to handle. Me and the widow woman are going to do some talking. We need to reach some kind of understanding before she says anything else bad about me. I think she'll figure it out soon enough.
Sam Two Wolves stopped his horse in front of the general store in Snake Creek and dismounted. He enjoyed the ride in the sunshine into town. The spring weather warmed his soul, and he was going to have some fresh, fried fish for supper. He felt at peace with the world and planned to let nothing interfere with his happiness, not even this shabby little town. All he needed was a few supplies. He'd take care of his business and be back in camp in a matter of hours. Matt was a fair fisherman, but Sam knew a few tricks his father taught him that should let him even up the catch in spite of Matt's head start. It was a friendly rivalry. Both blood brothers would be the winners when it came time to cooking the catch. The town was better than some, worse than others. With a practiced eye, he noted the arrangement of buildings on the short main street, the alleys, the places where a man might hide if he wanted to ambush another. Few people were out, and most of them seemed to be drifters or unsavory types who didn't bother to hide their hostility as they watched him pass. Sam pretended to pay them no mind, but made sure his gun was within easy reach if necessary. The general store was located a few buildings down from the jail, surrounded by saloons. Sam noticed a slim, attractive woman and a boy walk around a disheveled man to enter the jail. He smiled at the warm sight of a mother and son and entered the store to take care of his business. An older man and woman were behind the counter, stacking cans of peaches. Sam decided to take a few of those as well. It'd be a good dessert following the fish that night.
Howdy, ma'am. I'm looking for some supplies.
You're new in town. You one of King Petty's men?
Shush. Let's not look for trouble.
Oh, you hush.
I'm nobody's man, but my own.
Good answer. What do you need?
Sam walked toward the counter, taking a closer look at the woman. She had high cheekbones and dark skin, as if she also had Indian blood in her. Her eyes were dark, but with a slight twinkle. He couldn't tell how old she was, though there was gray in her hair. He handed her the list of supplies.
We can help you. I didn't mean to be rude. My name's Clarissa Ponder. This is my husband, Henry.
Throw in some of those peaches. And who is King Petty?
Thinks he owns the town.
He does. He's a hell of a mean son of a bitch. Fast with a gun. Dangerous. He and his men do pretty much what they want, when they want. They come in here and take without paying for it. It's kind of a sore point with my wife.
I wouldn't think you'd be too pleased either.
Well, damned right I'm not, but I don't see we have much choice in the matter. If it's a question of losing a few dollars in goods or losing your life, I'll choose living every time.
Sam acted as if he were looking at a barrel of coffee, but was actually watching the man's face. There was anger and hurt in his eyes. It bothered him to have to give in to Petty and his men, but he was obviously not a gunfighter. He was an older man trying to run a business in a struggling town. He wouldn't have a chance against Petty. Henry Ponder was just doing the best he could.
Come to think of it, I could use some of this coffee.
Clarissa came out from behind the counter. Her eyes looked over Sam, stopped at the necklace around his throat, made up of multicolored stones pierced by rawhide. Matt wore an identical necklace. She glanced into Sam's face, started to say something, then changed her mind as she returned to the other side of the counter.
You just passing through?
He wrapped the items while Clarissa totaled the bill.
Planning to do a little fishing.
Good pastime. I always figured a man couldn't get in too much trouble with a fishing pole in his hand.
That's the murderer! That's the man who killed my father!
Yeah.
Henry looked nervously toward the street.
He was causing trouble.
Just like I thought.
You wanted to know about King Petty? I'd lay odds that he's out there causing trouble again.
Sam stepped casually to the door and looked toward the jail in time to see a young man grab hold of a woman and start to drag her down the street. Another man held a boy.
Leave my boy alone! Get your hands off me!
Who are they?
The woman is Lily Brandom. The boy is her son. It's odd to see her in town. Usually her husband comes in by himself to buy supplies.
And the man holding her?
King Petty himself.
Sam knew better than to get involved, but he couldn't walk away and let a woman and her son be treated that way. He placed some cash on the counter.
I may be in town for a while, after all. Go ahead and start an account for me.
He checked the action of his Colt.
I'll be back in a few minutes to pick up my stuff.
I told you, Petty is dangerous and mean. He's killed lots of men. I'd think twice before I go out there.
Sam shrugged.
We never did catch your name to put on your bill.
Sam, Two Wolves.
Henry looked surprised, and Clarissa smiled.
The gunfighter?
No. Just a fisherman, if I'm lucky.
Leave her alone!
Let go of me!
It was nothing unusual to see King Petty throwing his weight around town, though it still generated a certain amount of attention. Faces gathered at doors and windows up and down the street to watch the scene in front of the jail. On the street were Petty's men. Everybody, law-abiding citizens and criminals, knew the plans Petty had for Lily. Nobody lifted a hand to help her. Petty knew they wouldn't.
Come along, woman. Spend a little time with a real man, and you'll forget that dead husband of yours. Hell, you'll probably even thank me.
The woman still struggled, even though Petty gripped her arm so tightly she knew escape was impossible.
Stop it! Leave us alone! Stop!
The kid was a nuisance and a distraction Petty would deal with later. For now, he had the woman. Petty stopped as a tall, dark-haired man stood in front of him.
Move! Out of my way.
I'd like to talk with the woman.
Nope. She's mine.
Petty was surprised the other man not only didn't move, but spoke directly to Lily.
Am I to assume this gentleman's attentions are uninvited and unwanted?
I want nothing to do with him, except to see him dead.
The name's Sam Two Wolves, and I'll see what I can do.
He turned to Petty.
Let her go.
Sam stood his ground, apparently unconcerned he was outnumbered and that Petty was supposed to be the most dangerous man in the area. Petty looked Sam over as he motioned some of his men forward.
You're not even worth the trouble it'd take to kill you. Giles, Ham, take care of this.
Giles was the first to draw. He was dead before the gun could clear leather. Sam's bullet hit Giles cleanly in the chest, throwing him backward into the dusty street. Sam pivoted and fell to the ground as Ham managed to squeeze off two shots, both missing their target by a wide margin. This one hit Ham in the neck. The outlaw dropped his gun, staggered three steps, and then fell lifeless near the other dead man. Petty remained cool. This was something new, for somebody to be almost as good with a gun as he was. Sam drew and fired with a casual grace and with unerring accuracy. Petty knew this man could be trouble. He loosened his grip and the woman pulled away, running toward her son.
Tommy!
Sam stood.
Let the boy go as well.
Khan did so. Tommy ran and wrapped his arms around his mother.
Any other discussion?
Not right now. But we'll meet again. You can count on it.
I look forward to it.
Petty started for the Black Bull. He called to his men without looking back.
Get rid of that trash on the street. I'm going for a drink. All this excitement's made me thirsty.
Sam gently guided the woman and child out of the street toward Ponder's store.
Sorry you and your son had to see that, ma'am. I'm not a gunfighter. I'm just trying to help.
Matt Bodine took his time selecting a sapling to use as his fishing pole.
Looks about right.
He attached the line and hook, then walked along the creek bank with a can of worms looking for just the right spot. Bodine knew how to use the fancy gear Easterners seemed to prefer. He could patiently stalk fish with spear and net as the Indians did. Sometimes, though, he just wanted to use a simple pole by a creek bank and let nature take its course. It was less work and a lot more relaxing. He finally found what he was looking for, a gentle hill covered with short grass with a tall tree to provide shade. The creek had enough brush to provide shelter for the fish, but not so much as to tangle the line. Matt expected no trouble, but made a quick search of the area before he sat down on the bank. He learned a long time ago a person couldn't be too careful. Trouble often came when least expected. All he found this time was cattle sign. Matt leaned back, dipped the hook in the water, and waited. The first nibble came within minutes. Matt watched the line patiently, set the hook at just the right instant, and yanked the fish from the water. Matt knew Sam considered himself an expert fisherman. When he got back, they'd have a friendly competition about who caught the most fish for supper. Maybe it wasn't fair for Matt to get a head start, but it would be funny to see Sam's face when he saw he was beat before he even started. Matt would make things even by cooking supper without complaint. If his luck continued, he'd have plenty of time to get the meal cooked before Sam returned. After an hour, the nibbles slowed, but not enough for Matt to move on. He was putting another worm on a hook when he heard sounds around him from two different directions. He instantly crouched down and pulled his Colt revolver from its holster. One sound was soft as the grass swayed. Matt knew it was a snake of some kind and turned his attention to the louder sound of something crashing through the underbrush. A large bull stuck its head through the bushes and glared at Matt with red eyes. Matt laughed. He had been around cattle all his life, owned a ranch in Wyoming, and could cowboy with the best of them. A bull, even a mean one, didn't bother him. If it waded into the creek, though, it would disturb the water and ruin fishing for the rest of the day.
Go on, old boy. Just move your hide and get your drink elsewhere.
It was a solid-looking animal that could be the sire of a good herd. Matt appreciated such an animal, but he didn't want the blame thing looking over his shoulder as he fished. Matt moved a step closer, ready to slap the animal in the face to get it started.
I said get out of here!
The bull took a step away from Matt, putting its foot down on the tail of a snake that was slithering through the grass. The snake, startled, bit the bull on its hind leg. It turned its red eyes on Matt as if it blamed the man for the pain, and attacked.
Go!
Matt could feel the animal's large horns whistle past his head. The bull kicked as it raced past, overturning Matt's bucket of worms and the fish he caught, then turned to face him again. Matt glanced at the empty bucket. The results of the afternoon's effort were gone. It aggravated Matt. He was tempted to shoot the critter on general principle, but he hated to waste such a fine-looking animal if it could be helped. Matt generally worked with cattle from the back of a horse, not on foot, and he didn't particularly like being at the disadvantage. Matt waited until the last minute, then ducked beneath the sharp horns and grabbed the animal by the neck, trying to wrestle it to the ground. Most men would have been thrown within seconds, but Matt held tightly, his muscles bulging with the effort. He finally got the leverage he needed, and the bull started to fall slowly to the ground. Matt released his grip and jumped out of the way as the animal finally hit the dirt.
Easy, fella.
Matt took off his hat to slap the critter's behind and send it along its way. He wanted only to go back to fishing, if there were still any fish that weren't scared away, when an angry voice called out.
I've got you in my sights. You've rustled the last of our cattle. I don't care what your boss says. You got our cows. I've seen your tracks. But damned if you're gonna take my bull.
Ralph Smiley was having a good time. As long as he'd been cattle rustling, the job had never been as easy as it had been since joining up with King Petty's outfit. In the old days, Smiley always had to watch his back trail, since some irate rancher or lawman seemed to be after him just because he took their critters. It made for some close calls. Smiley still followed his old habits, working mainly at night, away from the main herds, trying to cover his tracks, even though there really wasn't a need. With Petty, it was almost like a regular job. Petty had everybody so spooked that they left him, and anybody associated with him, alone. So it was a simple matter for Smiley and his men to go into a range, round up the choice animals, herd them into the hidden valley until they had enough, then drive the cattle to market. Smiley rode leisurely, almost absent-mindedly keeping the stolen animals on track. This bunch came from range used by Lester Brown and his son. Those two always made a lot of noise, but they were both as intimidated as everybody else. They might threaten, but they were no real danger. Or were they? Smiley paused and scratched his black beard as a figure rode toward him. The other hands looked to him for directions. He motioned for them to keep on with their work, but to keep a close watch. They continued with the cattle when the rider got close enough for Smiley to recognize Old Man Brown. The exception was Ash Crawford, whose job was not to look after the cattle, but to ensure that Smiley did his job. He looked busy, but rode close enough to hear Smiley's talk with Brown. The outlaw loosened his Colt in his holster and leaned back in the saddle, waiting for the visitor. Brown was, as expected, hopping mad. His eyes seemed to shoot fire through bushy gray eyebrows, and his mouth was set in a firm frown. Some said he was fairly good with a gun when he was younger, but since the death of his young wife, he kept to himself. Smiley figured Brown was too old now to cause serious trouble.
Those are my cattle!
They were your cattle! Now they're mine! And King Petty's!
You have to stand behind that punk kid to protect you? Throwing his name around doesn't mean a thing to me!
Maybe these were your animals, but there's been a change in ownership. As for Petty, last dozen men tried to fight him or pushing daisies. I'd think twice before you do anything stupid.
Brown, even in his anger, recognized he had no resources in this fight. Ash and two of Smiley's men were already coming over to join in the talk. Brown knew he was outnumbered and would be killed if he even acted like he would reach for his gun.
So you win again. I'll leave peaceably, though it pains me no end to see the herd I've worked toward for years just walking away from me.
Yep, such a sad sight. Is that why you came all the way out here? To kiss your ranch goodbye?
I planned to shoot you, no matter the trouble it might cause me with your boss. Even if it meant my getting killed, I wasn't going to put up with your crap anymore.
You gave up that idea?
Nothing I can do here. I know you think Petty rules this country, but I'm warning you, that will change. I swear I'll find some way to get my cattle back, and I plan to see you dead, one way or another.
Not a chance, old man. I don't take kindly to threats, but I'll overlook it because of your age. If you turn that horse around and get out of here, I'll let you live a little while longer.
You're a real bastard, Smiley.
Right. Petty likes that in a man. Now get out of here. If I see you again, I may have to shoot you.
Smiley turned his attention back to the cattle as Brown rode away. The outlaw figured he had seen the last of Brown. Matt shook his head slowly to clear it. He didn't want to admit it to himself, but the fight with the bull had left him temporarily drained. He turned toward the direction from where the voice had come.
We have some kind of misunderstanding. I'm not after your cattle.
No talk. Just stand still. When Pa gets back, we'll figure out what to do with you.
Matt cleared his head, stretched aching muscles, relaxed his gun arm, and loosened his fingers. He had to play for time. The man with the drop on him didn't want to kill him very badly, or else he would have shot already.
Why don't you come out and let me see you? I'm obviously no danger as long as your gun is on me.
A tall man stepped out from behind some brush. He was blonde-headed, as tall as Matt, but not as muscular, and held a rifle aimed at Matt's belly.
Don't try any funny stuff.
Not me. I'll never tell a joke to a hostile audience.
The other man looked at him with a puzzled expression.
If I were you, I wouldn't be telling jokes in a situation like this.
Who's joking? I'm just making conversation, being friendly. What's your name, friend? And why the big iron?
You're an odd one. Not like the others. I'm Daryl Brown, and the reason for the gun is I don't like rustlers.
I'll say it again, friend. This is obviously a case of mistaken identity. My name is Matthew Bodine, and I'm not a cattle rustler. Even if I was, I wouldn't try to steal a bull by riding him away. I'm just here to do a little fishing.
Just interested in fishing. Well, the way you're wearing that six-gun on your hip?
Man never knows when he'll be threatened by somebody holding a rifle on him.
You have an answer for everything.
Don't believe I've been fishing instead of rustling? I can prove it. I left my pole by the creek. Take a look.
Daryl glanced toward the creek just for an instant, but it was long enough for Matt to make his move. The other man was big, strong, and probably competent, but he lacked the experience and expertise Matt gathered over many years and miles of adventures. Matt leaped and hit the ground in a roll. He came up just inches from where Daryl was standing and drove his shoulder into the other man's belly. Daryl staggered but didn't fall. He dropped the rifle, brought both fists together, and hit Matt on the back of his neck. Daryl raised his fists to try again. Just as his hands came down, Matt purposely fell to the ground. Daryl was thrown off balance, toppling forward. Matt spun around the other man and stood, lashing out with a solid kick to Daryl's behind, sending him sprawling to the ground. Matt pounced on his opponent, delivering a solid blow to his face. Daryl took the blow without flinching. Then, with a mighty heave, Daryl sent Matt sailing over him. A trickle of blood was dripping from Daryl's nose, but it didn't slow him down. He moved in on Matt with a combination of rights and lefts Matt had trouble blocking, pushing him back toward the water's edge. Matt had to admit that the other man was a good fighter. He had a lot of heart and good instincts, but in his inexperience, he made too many errors. All Matt had to do was to be patient and wait for the other man to make a mistake. Matt finally found an opening at the water's edge. Daryl dropped his guard for an instant. The blow knocked the breath out of him, which gave Matt the chance to rapidly deliver more blows to the stomach and head. Daryl struck out with a wild punch that glanced off Matt's shoulder. It had little force, but threw Matt off balance. Daryl got him in a bear hug. Daryl threw him into the water, and then jumped in after him. Matt's fist was just rising out of the water when the gunshot exploded from the creek bank and the bullet hit the ground a few feet in front of Daryl and Matt. The bullet broke the back of the snake that was now writhing closer and closer to the water. The second shot separated the snake's head from its body, sending it flying through the air and landing in the water near Matt's face. Sam gently guided the woman and boy down the street toward Ponder's store. A small crowd remained behind, watching Petty's men and the undertaker carrying the bodies away. Sam appeared indifferent, but was ready for trouble. Petty and his men entered one of the saloons. Sam knew he made an enemy, but he didn't care. He did what was right. That was what mattered. The woman tried to act strong, but her walk was slightly unsteady, as if she was drinking. Sam knew that though he saved her from Petty's intentions, something terrible had already happened. Henry Ponder was near the door when Sam reached the store with the woman and boy. He was holding a shotgun. His hands nervously moved up and down the barrel, but he didn't stop them from entering. Clarissa was at a stove in the corner, boiling water for tea.
Sam Two Wolves, in my store. I've heard stories about how fast you and your partner Matt Bodine are with your guns. I figured they were exaggerated. I was wrong. You sure made short work of Petty's men out there.
Petty didn't draw on me.
He's mean and sneaky. He'll bide his time till he's good and ready. He'll try to surprise you or shoot you in the back.
Won't be the first man to try that, and probably won't be the last.
He directed the woman toward a chair near the stove. Clarissa took over from there. Sam walked across the floor and pulled up another chair to face the woman. She looked up at him with big eyes.
Thank you.
Now that I'm involved, you want to tell me your story? What have you got to do with King Petty?
The woman shuddered. Clarissa handed a cup of tea to Sam.
Would you give this to Lily?
As Sam took the cup, he noted some other scents besides tea in the cup. Apparently, Clarissa added some herbs to calm and heal, much as Sam's mother did when he was a child. Sam passed the cup to Lillian.
My name's Lily Brandom. This is my son, Tommy. Up until this morning, we had nothing to do with Petty. I just barely knew the name. I hardly ever come to town, letting my husband do whatever business needed doing.
What happened this morning?
Petty rode up to our homestead and shot my husband. Just for the hell of it. And because he said he wanted me.
Henry shook his head sadly.
He killed Jack?
We buried him this morning. Me and my son.
Sam knew there was nothing he could say that would lessen the loss.
I'm sorry.
He was a quiet man. He was a good man, I think. Never got into trouble. To my knowledge, he never even took a drink. He did business with Clarissa and me. We gave him credit, and he always found some way to pay us back.
Did Petty do anything to you?
No. He threatened to come back later, when he felt like it.
Then what are you doing in town, girl, if he's after you? That's asking for trouble.
I thought maybe the marshal could do something.
Holt, he's about as incompetent as they come. He follows Petty's orders.
I had to do something. I couldn't just sit around and wait for that monster to come back. I didn't know what else to do.
Clarissa patted the woman on the shoulder.
That's all right. That's all right.
Tommy was standing near his mother. He had been silent from the time of the shootout in the street. He finally spoke up, looking directly at Sam.
You weren't afraid. Everybody else is afraid of Petty, but you're not afraid. Could you help us? Could you kill the man that murdered my daddy?
Sam sensed some of the fire burning in the boy. The loss was still too new. He was still in a state of shock. The true anger and hurt would come later. Sam did not want to give a flippant answer, but he also had to be truthful.
I don't work that way. I don't kill in cold blood, not even rabid dogs like Petty.
But if you don't do it, nobody will.
Sam felt uncomfortable, but he had willingly put himself in the situation.
Tell you what, I plan to be in the area for a few days. Maybe I can be of some help. I can at least talk to the marshal for you. I'm making no promises, so don't get your hopes up.
Thank you, Mr. Two Wolves.
Call me Sam.
He turned to Ponder.
Henry, how about my supplies?
Don't underestimate Petty. He'll be gunning for you.
That's one reason I'll be sticking around for a while. I'd rather keep an eye on him than have him surprise me down the road.
Are you seriously thinking about trying to help Lily?
You and I both know she needs more than the kind of help I could give. She needs friends to see her through this time. She needs somebody to help her work her homestead. She needs time. I might help hand out a little justice, but it won't bring her husband back.
You're good, Sam. Maybe the best. But you don't know King Petty. You need somebody to watch your back. Where's your partner, anyway?
Matt is out where I should be, fishing. And staying out of trouble, I hope.
Not much scared Matt Bodine, and certainly not snakes. But there was something unsettling about seeing a snake's head land just inches from his face. Matt instinctively jumped backward to get away from the snake. Darryl Brown did the same in the opposite direction. The movement made the water ripple and the snake's head dance up and down. Matt and Brown watched the snake's head in awkward silence.
Hey, you two were so busy fighting each other, you almost got your asses bit. Lucky for you, I came back when I did.
That wasn't funny, Pa.
An older man stepped into the clearing near the creek. He held a rifle in his hands.
Oh, I don't know. You should have seen your faces when that snake's head landed between you two. It was tolerably fair shooting for an old man, if I do say so myself.
Yes, it was decent shooting.
Now, if you two are through fighting, come on out of the water. Let's talk.
He pointed his gun at Matt.
Don't forget, I have the gun pointed at your belly. If you were thinking of trying anything, that is.
Matt raised his hands in a gesture of peace.
All I want to do is a little fishing.
Well, then what's all the fighting about?
I was just minding my own business when one of your damn bulls tried to run me off. I don't run off too easy and convince the old boy to leave me alone. Next thing I know, your son's after me. Are you just naturally unfriendly or what?
I thought he was one of the rustlers, Paul.
Rustler problems? That I can understand. My camp's a little way down the creek. Let's get a fire going, boil some coffee, and see if we can start over again.
The older man held out his hand.
My name's Lester Brown. This is my son, Darryl. Some fresh coffee sounds mighty good.
I'm Matt Bodine. Come along and I'll get you that coffee.
Matt led the way, shaking his head in frustration at the bank where he was fishing, now churned into a muddy mess. The fish he'd caught for supper were lost. Well, it couldn't be helped now. There was still time to catch more fish. Matt walked to the water's edge and picked up his pole.
This is a good spot, or was a good spot. Fish are probably all scared away now, but there's a better place a little downstream and around the bend. After that coffee, I'll be glad to show you. It's the least I could do after the way my son treated you.
On the other hand, you did save us both from being snake-bit.
Water moccasins. This part of the country's full of them. Sometimes it seems you can't even walk more than a few feet without stepping on a dozen of them. I've been here for years and still can't get used to it. That's how the town got its name, you know, Snake Creek. That's what this place is called, too. Confusing? Not if you've been here for a while.
Matt was used to making accurate judgments about people. Though he was still irritated at Darryl's attack on him, Matt found himself liking Brown and his son. Darryl put up a good fight, and rustler problems did tend to make a person a little quick on the draw. When they reached the camp, Matt fixed some coffee, filled the cups, and sat back on the ground near the fire.
Now, tell me about your rustling problem.
Brown pushed his tattered hat back on his head.
I've been ranching in this part of the country for almost 20 years. Most of that time was on my own. It was tough, lonely work, but I made a go of it. Then I found Molly, bless her soul, and we had Darryl. It's just been him and me for a long time, but we've added to the herd. I've faced winter storms, droughts, and too many men who tried to take away from me what I've built and hope to pass on to my son. Nothing's gotten the better of me until King Petty came along.
Another rancher, an outlaw?
One hell of a mean son of a bitch. He'd just as soon kill you as talk with you. He's got the whole town afraid of its own shadow. Everybody's scared of him. Other riffraff know a good thing when they see it, so they joined up with him. Ralph Smiley's one of them.
I've heard of him. Small-time crook. Never amounted to much.
He hooked up with Petty and has been stealing this area blind. He finally got to my spread last night. I tracked them for a few miles, and like a fool, confronted them. Almost got myself killed. But doing nothing leaves a bad taste in my mouth. I haven't worked this hard for this long just to give it up now.
Any plans?
Still working on them. I know I'm not going to just roll over and play dead.
Don't blame you. I wish you luck. Now, how about showing me that good fishing spot?
King Petty stared at the ceiling in a mood appropriate to the name of his Black Bull Saloon. He took it from the original owner years ago and now used it as his private club. The girls, who were usually on his lap, kept their distance, as did his men. An open bottle of whiskey stood on the table in front of him. Petty's thoughts kept returning to the Brandom woman and how easily the stranger, Sam Two Wolves, took her from him. His draw was almost as fast as Petty's, and he didn't back away from a fight like everybody else in town. Two Wolves could be a problem. On the other hand, Petty was bored with the way things were. Two Wolves might present a challenge to him. He might make life a little more interesting before Petty killed him. After all, Petty could also make life interesting for Two Wolves. He was not about to let Two Wolves get away with humiliating him and killing his men. He gulped his drink, poured another, and thought again about Lily Brandom. She was a desirable woman. He wanted her before. Now he had to have her. Two Wolves saw to that. Nobody told King Petty what to do, when to do it, or who to do it with.
Come, get over here.
The tall man at the bar strolled over to Petty's table.
Find Holt.
Sure, boss. But what do you want with that clown?
I want to talk to him. He ain't worth much, but he is the marshal. We might be able to use that as a weapon against Two Wolves. Maybe we can find some way to make his stay in town a little more uncomfortable.
Yeah, I don't think Two Wolves is going to scare easy.
If we can't get to him, then maybe the Widow Brandom. We'll come up with something. One way or another, I plan to have the Widow. And I plan to kill Sam Two Wolves.
Lily remained quiet since they left Ponder's store. Sam, holding the reins of the woman's wagon, knew the reason for her calm was partly due to the mixture Clarissa had prepared for her. It wasn't a drug, but a combination of herbs known to some Indians and old-timers, used to temporarily soothe nervous problems. It would also help her sleep when she returned home. Unfortunately, it would not make the following days any easier to accept. Sam could tell a lot about a man by the way he treated his animals. He respected the late Jack Brandom. The two horses pulling the wagon were not fancy, but they were sturdy and healthy. They were worked, but they were also well-fed and groomed. Sam figured Jack Brandom was a no-nonsense kind of man, a hard worker, somebody who probably tried to take care of his family the best way he knew how. Sam watched Lily as they rode. She was a very attractive woman, with soft hair and a handsome figure. She seemed to be in her 20s, which would mean she married young. That was not unusual. Even in her grief, she was protective of her son, and the sorrow at the loss of her husband seemed genuine. Sam sympathized with Lily and Tommy. Though in town he tried to discourage any idea of his taking revenge on King Petty, Sam knew he would not walk away from this fight. This killing was so cruel and senseless, Sam knew he must do something, though he wasn't sure what. For now, his action was to see the mother and son safely home. Sam's horse was tied behind the wagon, carrying the bags of supplies purchased from the Ponders.
Lily, I said back in town I might try to help you. To do that, I need more information. Do you feel up to it?
The woman nodded her head.
Tell me exactly what happened.
It all happened so fast. It's a blur. One minute, Jack's in the field breaking ground for planting. Tommy's helping him. I bring them some water and Tommy comes with me back to the house. Next thing I know, I hear two shots and I see that Petty riding over the hill and bragging that he shot my husband.
Did Jack have any enemies? Could he have somehow provoked the fight?
I don't think so. No, he didn't. Petty bragged that he killed Jack in cold blood. He killed him!
Sam stopped the wagon. The boy didn't cry, but he moved closer to her. Sam put his arms around both of them, wishing he could do more.